like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guests today are Marisa and Chris Hughes, co-founders of the Mr. Mo Project, a nonprofit organization that places senior, sometimes ill, shelter dogs, the type of dogs particularly inclined to end up euthanized otherwise, into effectively permanent foster homes, and then they cover these dogs' medical expenses and food costs for the foster families. We'll hear how exactly the Mr. Mo Project works, for example, how they determine which elderly dogs to pluck from the shelters and relocate, the story of the late pit bull who became the organization's namesake, and more when we speak with Marisa and Chris Hughes in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also later in the show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll offer a copy of the Talking Animals Anniversary Bash CD. Also, I want to mention the dubbing up screening of Sit, Stay, Ride, the story of America's sidecar dogs. The last mention, I swear, I promise. It was last night at Tampa Picture Show. It was sold out, so very nice for WNF and nice for the theater, since lots of folks were eating and drinking, which helped them, of course. More to the point, perhaps, people really, really seemed to enjoy the movie. Thank you to everyone who came out and supported WNF. Thanks to Wayne and everyone at the Tampa Picture Show. Thanks to everyone who helped get the word out about the screening. Thanks to Miss Julie, who had her hands full with ticket sales. And thanks to my partner in crime on this event, the fabulous Flea. Wonderful time was had by all, and really, really appreciate it. Before we speak with Marisa and Chris Hughes, let's hear a dog song. This is Cat Stevens with I Love My Dog on Talking Animals.
I love my dog as much as I love you. But you may think my dog will always come through. All he asks from me is the food to give him strength. All he ever needs is love, and that he knows he'll get. So I love my dog as much as I love you. But you may think my dog will always come through. All the pay I need comes a shining through his eyes. I don't need no cold water to make me realize that I love my dog as much as I love you. But you may think my dog will always come through. As much as I love you, but you may think my dog will always come through.
That's Cat Stevens, back when he was known as Cat Stevens, with I Love My Dog. Speaking of loving dogs, let's discuss the Mr. Mo Project with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Marisa and Chris Hughes to Talking Animals. Good morning, Marisa and Chris.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Talking Animals. And, of course, we'll discuss the Mr. Mo Project in some detail, including the lovely dog who was its namesake, in a moment. But the scope and ambition of this organization, not to mention the enormous empathy for senior dogs that it reflects, makes me want to start by asking what each of your experiences were with dogs growing up. You can go ahead and start, maybe, Marisa, if you don't mind.
Sure, yeah. I think I've had a dog my entire life. My first experience with a dog was a border collie named Lady, and I used to just go wherever she went. We were joined at the hip, and then we've always had dogs since then. And my first rescue, I think I was about 9 years old, and there was a dog just on the street at our friend's house, and I would visit her every time I went there. And eventually, my aunt and I went to the person's house that we thought owned her and said, you know, can we have this dog? And they said, sure, you can take her. She's not ours. We just feed her. So her name was Honey. She was a beagle. She came home with us as well. So I think I've had rescue in my blood my whole life.
So, and it also sounds like you grew up in a family where dogs were important and animals were important, and helping animals was important.
Yes, they're very important. And we usually rescued our dogs. We would go to a shelter if we didn't just find them on the street. So, yep, always rescues. I didn't know what a purebred dog really was or what it meant. The first one I ever had was my greyhound. So when I was 23, I started rescuing greyhounds, and that's an experience.
Well, I'm starting to see a distinct through line here of rescue, rescue, rescue. So Chris, how about you? Are you a dog person from way back as well?
We had our first dog. His name was Beethoven. We got him from the Animal Protection League, where we lived in Ohio. And he was, you know, just an awesome dog. And it really, we realized we wanted another dog. So then we went back to the APL, and we got another dog named Misty. And this was all, I was probably, I don't know, maybe 3 years old when we got our first dog. So we have always had rescue dogs. And Misty was, we had her until she was 17. So we've always had dogs. And I think it's because my mom was not allowed to have a dog when she was growing up. So once she was able to, she really instilled that with us.
It's so funny. Over the years, I've been doing that show. I that kind of story you hear periodically, the classic sort of reacting against, I was not allowed to have a dog or a cat or whatever it was. And so then those are the people who are adopting and living with dogs and or cats, mm-hmm. with a fervor, making up for lost time, I guess. So it sounds like, again, in your family as well, Chris, then, yeah, dogs and again, rescue dogs was significant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So now, when did you two meet?
Three years.
Wow, you know the dog stories right away, but as far as actually meeting, you seem a little stymied there. Interesting.
Oh, well, okay, so we'll be married 2 years in October, and then we were together for like a year before that. So whatever that puts us at. But I
okay.
think when we started the Mr. Mo Project.
Oh, well, no, we'll get into that for a sec, but I'm just curious, partly because when you were dating or at least getting serious, like how important for each of you was a shared love of dogs?
That's pretty much what brought us together.
Oh, yeah? How so?
We met through rescue. So the big thing for us was I lived in New York and he lived in Ohio. And it was, if our dogs get along, then we can keep going with this. But if they don't get along, then, you know, we'll have to figure something else out. So he had 6 dogs and I had 2 dogs. And when they met, I was praying, please, greyhounds, behave and get along with these dogs. And thankfully, it went beautifully. I think Chris can attest to that as well, because he was with them the majority of the time.
Man, well, that sounds like there was a lot riding on those 8 dogs all getting along smoothly.
Yeah.
So, Chris, let's back up for a moment there, just because before this, the big test of can the dogs get along happened, obviously you had somehow, I guess, rescued, adopted 6 dogs in one kind. Or how did you get to 6 before you even met up with Marisa?
Well, they were not all my permanent dogs. So I ran Rowdy to the rescue, which was the initial rescue that I started back in 2010-11. So those 6 dogs were not all mine.
Ah.
3 of them were mine, and 3 of them were fosters.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And it's, you know, I always brought them into my home. I mean, it was, Rowdy to the rescue was such a big family thing. My parents would have foster dogs. That was kind of what we did. We'd take them and put them in our own homes. But I knew they would. I mean, I had no worries that they wouldn't get along.
So again, every which way, we're seeing dogs, and more dogs in the story, individually, as a couple, and again, now we'll get into. Let me just let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guests are Marisa and Chris Hughes, founders of the Mr. Mo Project, which places a a premium on relocating senior and sometimes ill shelter dogs into foster homes, footing the medical bills and food costs for those foster families. If you'd like to ask them a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So naturally, I want to spend some time on Moses, but first, can you set the scene of, so when you guys, when Moses entered your world, so was it those eight dogs that was kind of constituted the household?
Our lives were revolved around our dogs.
But was the population eight at that time?
He was in that, yes.
Okay, so he was part of the eight. Okay.
But he wasn't mine from the get-go.
So how did he enter in your world, since he's obviously a pivotal creature here?
He was shared with me, a friend of ours named Amy Mills, who runs Sniffing Snouts Pitbull Rescue in Florida. She shared this photo of this handsome senior dog wearing a tie. And I saw this and I'm like, oh my goodness, I have to have this dog. And I reached out to them. He was surrendered because he was older. They didn't want an older dog. And from my understanding, they actually tried to adopt a puppy the same day they surrendered him to the shelter, which just blows my mind. We were able to get him out of the shelter, and Amy actually ended up fostering him for a couple weeks. And then we had a lovely friend of ours, Lori, and her husband actually drove from Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, to Florida, was there for a couple of days and brought Moses back to me. And then he was here in the rescue. He was not adopted right away. We had all intentions on, you know, placing him into a permanent home, and that, you know, failed very quickly when he was just such an awesome dog that I knew he couldn't leave.
Right. He was that dog was there to stay. Yeah. And I guess we should know for the listeners, I mean, it's implied, but Moses is the namesake of the Mr. Mo project. So now he's kind of a part of the family. Kind of, you know, obviously he was in his own category. Tell me a little bit more about the Moses story, including, unfortunately, when he started to exhibit signs that he was a bit ill.
Rare, in my opinion. He was kind of larger than life. Like, we love every dog, and we see dogs and we think, oh, they're so cute and we want to kiss them. But this dog was just full of personality, had a plan, and executed it beautifully. So he started, like, talking, grunting, groaning, chatting. So if you asked him a question, he would grunt and groan back at you, which none of our other dogs did. So you really felt like he was trying to communicate with you. But he also had this smile and this light in his eyes, so even our friends on Facebook felt like they knew him. So about 20 months after his initial entry into the Hughes pack, he had started, like, shifting his weight strangely, and he couldn't walk straight. And it was Valentine's Day, and Chris and I were having a big dinner, and said, Chris, I got to take him to the vet right away. And so I did, and they said, oh, it should clear up in 10 days. So I brought him back home, and Chris didn't feel comfortable with that, so he brought him to Cornell, which is about 3 hours from us. And they sent him back home, and then he took him the next day, and so all weekend, Moses and Chris were there. And finally, on Monday the 17th, he was officially diagnosed with an inoperable spinal cord tumor. That was kind of growing into the spinal cord versus on the outside of it, so it was much less painful, but we could do much less about it as well. So they gave him about 4 weeks to live, and I gave him more than that. So he lived 5 weeks from the day that he was diagnosed, and we were so devastated by his loss that I think Chris especially felt like we needed to honor him, honor his life, and honor his legacy. And so Chris just thought this idea up and went full speed ahead with it.
So the idea specifically is how would you describe it, Chris, that you came up with in the wake of the sad loss of Moses?
Well, I mean, it was almost kind of like a selfish thing. I didn't want people to forget him, and I knew how much it cost us to care for Moses in the last few months that we had him with all the vet bills. And we had to sell our hot tub to get an MRI for him so we could actually get the diagnosis. And not everybody can do that. And, you know, not everybody has that income there. So I'm like, well, this is a way that we can save senior dogs and ensure that they get the care they need and take away that financial strain and keep them in their home. And it was a big kind of endeavor, knowing that, well, every dog that we take into the Mr. Mo Project, no matter what, we are going to be financially responsible for. They might be completely healthy at the beginning, but, you know, months down the road, we might have a big bill, and we just need to be aware of that. So that was my big...
And so it's interesting because, as we've already established earlier, you guys have both been lifelong dog rescuers, adopters, etc. So along the way, I'm going to guess in your history, you must have had, you know, more than a little experience with sick dogs and, of course, losing dogs and, in some cases, the attendant medical costs. So was it just, again, the larger-than-life aspect of Moses and the impact of losing him that galvanized you into taking what, again, must have been a number of experiences that you're sort of dealing with now in the Mr. Mo Project and said, okay, now we're going to do this about that because of Moses?
I think it was the fact that we only had him for, you know, a little over a year, knowing that he was surrendered as, you know, a 12 to 14-year-old dog who lived his whole life. We don't know what he lived before, but that he was, for some reason, taken to a shelter at that age.
Yeah.
That's kind of what stuck with me.
So it's a few things, including that, sadly, it's all too common that when dogs get older, people often just say, you know what, it's not gonna really work out for us anymore here, and then and off they go.
And we had Rowdy to the rescue when we lived in Ohio, and it kind of, you know, everybody's kind of got a dog rescue, so we wanted to do something a little different and continue to make a huge impact in dogs' lives. So this seemed like a no-brainer to us. We had just taken another senior dog named Dave. We took him in January, and he actually passed away 3 months ago today. So after losing Moses and then having Dave, we knew that these senior dogs were being surrendered to shelters, and some of them aren't even adoptable. They're not on the adoption floor. They're rescues only, and rescues don't take senior dogs because it's expensive. So
yeah,
we're kind of a... We found our niche there.
Right. How exactly does it work then? Because sort of, as we've all at least alluded to, there's an endless supply of dogs that fit this description. Older dogs, sometimes dogs that are not only older but ill. So how do you determine who to help?
I think we try to help as many as we can. People
sure.
send us requests through our Facebook page, through our website. We probably receive, you know, 10 to 20 requests a day, and we can't obviously rescue 10 to 20 dogs a day.
Yeah.
Thankfully, there are other groups out there that do rescue seniors like us as well. So we usually say, you know, try to maybe if there's a local group that can help you. And if not, we'll look through our foster applications because we do hold on to foster applications. And if someone reaches out to us with a dog in that area, we'll reach out to them and see if they're still interested in fostering for us. And then we'll go through the, you know, the reference checks and all that stuff. So that's how people let us know about dogs in need.
It is really hard to decide which dogs we can help and which dogs we can't. What helps us a lot is when we have kind of contacts in that area that can meet the dog, tell us about the dog, have them dog tested or cat tested. So we have a lot of people in Florida that help us, and people in California as well. And then sometimes Chris just sneaks like 7 dogs into the rescue without telling me. So that's a good way as well.
Sure. Well, that's good. You got to be sneaky sometimes in the best way possible.
So for forgiveness, not permission.
There you go. Is there specific criteria? I mean, for example, for you guys, again, you can't help everybody get more requests per day than you could possibly respond, although you obviously are referring as many of those out as you can to other comparable organizations. But I mean, do dogs need to be of a certain age? How important is a medical condition? I mean, there must be some way, whether it's unspoken or otherwise, instinct, I don't know what, but where you sift through and say, okay, we're going to do this one and we're going to do this one over here today. And so how would you arrive at a decision like that?
I think medical really has nothing to do with it. We'll take any medical case, and we'll provide any care that they need. So it's not really medically. Unfortunately, with a lot of our fosters and most people in rescue in general already have other pets. So a lot of times when people reach out with these dogs that are dog aggressive, it's very hard for us to be able to take them because we don't have foster homes that don't have other pets. We have a couple in the program that are dog aggressive, and we've worked around it. We found foster homes that don't have other pets, and they understand the need to not be around other pets. But that's probably the biggest thing that stops us from being able to take a dog is having that aggression, the aggressive side.
I see.
And then, of course, we take, kind of depending on the breed, will go by the age. And then if, like, you know, if a dog is maybe 8 years old and just needs a dental, I feel like that's still an adoptable dog. So sometimes, I hate to say it, but the sicker the dog, the better the chance that, we'll take them into the project, because we know no one's going to want them, or, you know.
Well, that's kind of what I meant. I wondered in the matrix of factors when I asked about the medical issue, because I just felt like, from what I gather at least, that again, if you're making choices, that sometimes the dog's medical condition might be an important factor in being selected to enter the Mr. Mo project. So.
Right. It never deters us. It actually kind of helps them get in quicker. Yeah.
Right. Which is one of the things that's just, I think, so amazing and impressive about the Mr. Mo project. Let's take a phone call. And hi, you're on Talking Animals with Marisa and Chris Hughes.
Hello,
it's you.
There.
Go ahead.
You're talking to two of my favorite people in the whole world.
Oh.
This is LJ. And Betty and I just wanted to check in and tell you we love you, and what they do is fantastic.
Well, that's...
LJ has one of our dogs.
Well, there you go. See, it's old home week here on Talking Animals. But no, I don't doubt your testimonial in the least, LJ, and I appreciate your call. And obviously, yeah, they're doing great, great work.
They do a great job. Betty came to us from Florida. They made arrangements to bring her up to me. I live outside of Rochester, New York, and it was the best decision we made.
That's great.
She's been wonderful.
Well, that's nice to hear yet another kind of voice in the mix of how this works in a more specific sense. So thank you very much, LJ, for calling. I appreciate
You're
that.
You're very welcome. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye-bye. You, LJ.
Thank you.
So the LJ call kind of makes me wonder, I mean, I assume, really, that the Mr. Mo Project foster families must be really, truly extraordinary people. I mean, on the one hand, I gather you view these as kind of long-term, if not indefinite, foster, quote-unquote, situations. While on the other hand, these dogs are elderly, if not, as we've already discussed a little bit, ill. So talk a little bit about the folks who do decide to become foster families for the Mr. Mo Project.
Chris, do you want to do that?
Oh, sure. Okay. It's really unbelievable. A lot of these dogs are very sick, and when we're asking people to take these dogs, knowing that, you know, they could live for a couple years, but also that they could live for a couple months, and to bring these dogs into your home, love them like they're your own, and then understand that they're going to pass away is really hard. And it's something that we find very hard to do, and we are asking people on a regular basis to do it. And the fosters, we consider them part of our family. And, you know, the Mr. Mo Project is just a big family. We talk to our fosters as much as we possibly can. We try to be as reachable to them as possible. And it's just amazing what they're able to do. The dog, you know, giving these dogs the lives that they have now. And we're just so thankful for them. We're thankful for everybody that supports us and that they can, you know, they kind of stand behind us. But the foster families are truly amazing.
How do you find these foster families, and or how do they find you?
They reach out to us very often through our Facebook page or just through the MrMoProject.com, and they fill out a foster application. And then when we have a dog that we think will fit into their life, we'll call and ask if they're still available to foster. And like Chris said, we have some of the most remarkable people I've ever met. I mean, they're almost too good to be true. And for us, you know, we can call and pay a bill. That's not a big deal. But what they do is the big deal. And without them finding us or us finding them, this project wouldn't exist or be as successful as it is.
For sure. And we talked a moment ago about at least loose criteria for selecting a dog that would enter into the Mr. Mo Project. What sort of criteria is there followed in selecting foster homes?
We check references. They'll fill out their application, put references. We always check those. Make sure that they're, you know, reputable people and good people, and the majority of them all are. We also check what kind of animals they have at home, dogs, kids, do they have children or do they have cats, and then whatever dog fits into their life. You know, if they rent an apartment, then we check with the apartment complex. Will they allow this kind of dog or this size of dog? And location doesn't really matter. Normally we'll find a dog in their area, but if not, we can transport dogs.
So even though you guys are in upstate New York, there could be a foster home any part of the U.S., pretty much, that would be part of the network. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the Talking Animals with Marisa and Chris Hughes.
Hi.
Hi, it's you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I am very aware of one kind of particular instance that's really heartbreaking, which is when a senior has to go into a nursing home or long-term care and has to give up their dog. I spent a lot of time with my parents over the years in retirement homes and nursing homes. And for a lot of seniors who've been in the same came home for 40 years, giving up everything, and their best friend is just heartbreaking. In fact, I really believe it may have killed people, you know, if not the animal as well. And I really hope that there would be some way to arrange foster situations where the foster people could bring the dogs to visit their old friends in the homes. I can see that that might be very difficult to arrange, but it's just something I wondered if you could comment on, please.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. Go ahead, Chris and or Marisa.
I think that's a great idea. I had a hard time hearing what she was saying.
In a nutshell, Chris, she was basically talking about, you know, elderly folks who end up in homes of one kind or another, having to leave their dogs behind. And is there some kind of means that where they could still visit with their dogs or have visits from their dogs? I know that's not what you guys do, but I think she was just looking for some sort of comments about that.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. I am an occupational therapist and I work in a rehab setting. So I know that a lot of the people here did have dogs at home and miss them tremendously, so their family members still bring them in. The only problem is sometimes someone surrendering a dog could be in New York and our foster is in Connecticut or Massachusetts. So that's really a struggle. We try not to let a good home go. So wherever it is, we kind of accept that and get the dog to them. But I think maybe just keeping a correspondence with that person or pictures, I think it would be a great idea, both for the dog and for the person that surrendered it.
And I should note that, because we've dealt with this a few times on the show over the years, there's at least one organization that really urges people of all ages, especially people elderly, but really can happen in any way, to make plans almost like a will or document that specifies if you get ill briefly, if you're incapacitated, if you get in a car accident, who will look after your animals in your absence and mm-hmm. what sort of instructions to follow. So that's called Second Chance for Pets. Second is a numeral 2 and the 4 pets is a numeral 4. But anyways, for our caller and others with similar interests, that's also an important element of exactly what you're asking about. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guests are Marisa and Chris Hughes, founders of the Mr. Mo Project, an organization that places seniors, sometimes sick dogs, from shelters into ongoing foster homes, paying the medical and food costs for those foster families. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So yeah, one of the things that obviously really stands out about the Mr. Mo Project, as opposed to maybe some that also are geared for elderly or senior dogs, is that you do foot the bill for medical and food costs for these foster families. So how does that work, and how are your efforts funded in that way? Is it just donations? Do you receive grants? Where do those monies come from?
So we're a 501c3 nonprofit. So we receive donations. We are, you know, publicly funded. We do ask for donations. We've looked into grants. We both work full time as well, and I know a lot of these grants take a long time and a lot of effort to put in. So we've never applied for a grant, and I don't know if we'd be able to either.
Okay.
I know they're very difficult to do.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is, you know, through Facebook. We do T-shirt campaigns. We are having an auction right now that one of our, a big group of our fosters have put on through one of our Facebook pages. So we raise money that way.
Okay. And again, if people are listening and say, hey, wow, these guys are doing great, great work, and we'd really like to help, if they're inclined to do so, they can go to MrMoProject.com and contribute in that way directly, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, through our Facebook page, through website, anyway.
Yeah. Great. All right, so let's go. We got a few emails and texts here. One of these says to your guests, thank you, that's all capitals, so much for looking after the older dogs. After days of cruelty in the news, the story is so heartwarming. Your website is great, too. Any organizations, I guess, that you know of for older cats, thank you. So is there anything comparable that you guys are aware of that helps our feline friends?
I'm not aware of. I just had someone call and ask the same thing, and I'll have to really look into it. I think that's not a bad idea to have kind of links to other people that do the same thing on our website, so maybe we can look into that.
Yeah,
if they send us
an email, we can look into it and see if we can reach out to some groups.
Cool. That's great. Well, it seems like that's kind of also a running theme with you guys, is that one or the other, if you can't help directly, that you'll get in touch with someone or try to get in touch with someone who can, whether it's taking a dog that you can't take or even helping with a cat. So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Here's another one, kind of another nice testimonial. I think Chris and Marisa had the biggest hearts ever. They help so many dogs. How do they find the time to do all that they do? We love them. So that was a question I had in a way, because I know you guys both full-time separately from all this. So there must be some pretty impressive time management that goes on.
Actually, we have all full-time management.
Okay.
And we just have really understanding supervisors.
Oh, okay.
So I'm, you know, during lunch breaks, I'm often returning phone calls or emails. I know Chris does a lot kind of on the side of when he has a minute to send an email or a response. But we use weekends a lot and evenings. We'll call off the fosters or check references and whatnot. So we're still figuring it out,
because yeah.
I think it's really hard to balance work and rescue our seven dogs and a marriage as well. So.
Well, so far so good, it sure seems like. And when was Mr. Mo Project actually established?
June of last year.
So it's pretty new, but already obviously on the rise. And, you know, nice Huffington Post piece on you guys last week. And it just seems like people are really taking notice. Here's another emailer, kind of with maybe a more general question. Hello, I'm listening to Talk Animals. My question to the lovely couple is, what is your advice for introducing a new dog into your existing pack at home, either as a foster or a permanent adoption?
Get a train.
That's a great question. And I think it's really responsible that they're even asking. Yep.
Yeah, we will always, one thing we do with any dog that we place in any home is we will contact a local trainer and always have a trainer do the introduction, because we understand how important that initial meeting is to the entire, you know, home dynamic from that point on. So we as an organization will pay for a trainer to be there as often as need be, just to make sure things stay on a positive, you know, positive level.
That's really great. And again, I guess that's probably just the product of years and years and years and years of living with and all kinds of dogs and knowing what happens and what can sometimes go a little bit sideways, but can be easily sort of avoided or corrected in the right hands.
Yeah, because trainers are going to have a much more of a level head than you as the owner will. You know, you've got your own dog, you're trying to introduce another dog, your stress levels are going to be high, you're going to be nervous, and the dogs will feed off of that. So having someone who's on a level playing field, who does this on a normal basis, can bring that stress level down to where it's much more manageable.
That's really terrific that you guys have those kind of resources once again. So let me just let folks know one more time. We're speaking with Marisa and Chris Hughes, founders of the Mr. Mo Project. We're just in our last moment or two probably of speaking of that. But the Mr. Mo Project is an organization that plucks out older, sometimes sick dogs from shelters from really all across the country. And these are often, of course, the kind of dogs that are unfortunately top candidates to be euthanized. So they grab them out and place them into ongoing foster homes and underwrite the medical and food costs for these foster families. So if you have a final question or comment, you can call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Let's talk a little bit about some of the Mr. Mo dogs looking for foster homes at the moment. I mean, obviously we can't mention them all, but if you had to highlight, say, you know, three or four that are on the website or just otherwise particularly looking for foster homes, who would some of those dogs be?
We are really happy to say, actually, that the 63 dogs we have in the project right now all have forever foster homes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it's hard. Sometimes we get in over our head and we take a dog without a secure foster home, and then we're scrambling for a while. But so the seven dogs we just took from North Carolina, we had their foster set up almost before they got here. Some of them are still at the vet receiving care, but the others are in their foster homes. But we are working on two dogs, I think, in Florida, right, Chris?
Just one. We have a foster for one. So we're looking for a foster for one.
And where in Florida are you looking?
Clay County.
Okay.
And that's the lab. I think it's a black lab with some pretty significant spinal issues, so has a very hard time walking and getting up and getting around, and is overweight, has a thyroid condition, but really good with other dogs.
And is that dog on the pictured on the website at the moment, or?
Not yet.
No, they don't go on the website until we actually have them in the program.
Okay, sorry. I guess I didn't understand that part, but.
Yeah, we've got to find a foster for them before we can pull them out of the shelter.
Right. Okay, so hopefully some folks listening might be thinking, hey, I'd love to have that black lab. So
no bills. we cover everything.
Yeah, no, that's really, I mean, that's so amazing. And again, I guess we've established a few different ways coming and going that there really are no geographical limitations, right, for placing the dogs. Where they come from or where they go to is pretty much wide open. You guys are just sort of a very cool, like, clearinghouse. And then again, you're paying the bills for dogs that, you know, have medical issues and or just to help keep them fed and stuff.
I don't know if you've ever heard of Kindred Hearts Transport Connection. We work really closely with them, and they're a network of thousands and thousands of drivers that are all across the country. And we pretty much tell them where the dog is at and where the dog needs to get to, and they will set up within days a train of cars. And we brought a dog within the matter of probably 5 days. We brought a dog from McAllen, Texas, to Clifton Park, New York, through 30 drivers, and that was set up within a matter of days.
Well, I haven't.
It's an all-volunteer group.
Yeah, no, that's great. I've talked to comparable groups, including at least one notable one based here in Florida nearby, and then one a few years ago that I loved that's all truck drivers who, on their routes, are happy to take dogs to and fro. And so it's pretty amazing what you can do to get a dog from point A to point B, even if there's thousands of miles between point A and point B. So, let's take one more call before we might have to. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Marisa and Chris Hughes.
Hello.
Hello, it's you. Go ahead, please.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is Doreen Foman. I'm out in Concord, North Carolina. I took one of the rescue dogs from Wake County out in Raleigh. Hi, Chris. Hi, Marisa.
Hi, Doreen.
I took Peaches.
Oh, Peaches, yes.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I took Peaches, and she's doing great. I just wanted to say, you know, you guys are doing a great thing. It's just amazing that you took all the other dogs, and they all have homes, and I've been following Dakota. It's just, like I said, you're amazing people, and I just wanted everybody to know.
Wow.
Well, thank you, Doreen. You're pretty amazing for just welcoming Peaches. We've never met Peaches, but we have seen some pictures of her, and we're thrilled that she's in a home with other dogs and with a great mom. So thank you.
Yes, and I just wanted to say also that the reason I saw Peaches was on Facebook. I saw that, you know, she was one of the seven and that she was probably going to be euthanized. And I just, you know, made out the application, and boom, Chris called me, and 2 days later, she was on my doorstep. So it just.
And do you think she's got a lot of life left in her? I mean, is she enjoying her time?
I do. Yeah, she's doing great. She got a pretty good clean bill of health from the vet that I brought her to. She's pretty active. she seems happy. She's settling in. It's taken a little while. She seems unsure of where she is, like she's going to be booted off again or something, you know. She's starting to relax, and I have two other senior male dogs, and everybody's getting along great. She's settling right in. She
That's
is
great.
She does kind of have a little, I think, doggy dementia. She's but I'm wondering too if she's just unsure of where she is, and she's just going to take a while to settle in. She's standing here staring at me right now. I wish you could see her. She is the cutest little thing.
Well, thank you. What a great story. Thank you so much for your call, and I'm so happy to hear Peaches is doing so well. Thank you.
She is. She's doing great, and I actually nicknamed her Peeps because she doesn't seem to come to Peaches or...
Yeah.
Or Peeps. But,
all right. Whatever
that
works.
Might come with time.
All right. Thank you so much. So, you know, that's a perfect example of how interesting and effective the work that you guys do is that Peaches is a dog you've never met or laid eyes on, and yet you've helped find a home for Peaches.
Well, probably half the dogs in our program we've never actually.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes sense if you think about it, but I mean, it's just a measure of kind of the scope and ambition and how many kind of people you have kind of helping you and all the sort of resources and you know, foster homes, et cetera, just scattered around that could happen, and they just don't pass through directly your home or your neck of the woods even. So anyways, this has been great. We're just sort of nearing the end of our time. We've been speaking with Marisa and Chris Hughes from the Mr. Mo Project. The website, if you're inclined to find out more and or donate, is MrMoProject.com, MrMoProject.com. And, of course, they have a very active Facebook page. You can search for that. Great, great work. Thank you guys so much for joining me today on Talking Animals. And obviously, really just so pleased and impressed with the work you're doing.
Thank you so much
for having us.
All right, thank you. Take care. All right, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Aaron Foley with a piece called Simply Dogs. I'm Talking Animals.
We're thinking about getting a dog. Dog people, clap. Yeah? People love the dogs. I love the dog. I've never had a dog. It would be super exciting to get a dog. Not, and funny. hilarious. I don't know what kind of dog I want to get. It just seems like when I look around, there's a lot of aggressive crossbreeding going on with dogs these days. It's weird. I don't even know what I'm looking at anymore. Like, you used to be able to look at a dog and be like, that's a lab. That's a golden retriever. Now you look at a dog and you're like, what the hell is that? It's like a face of like a Doberman. Like a shepherd body. But it's so tiny. It's such a tiny dog. And I'm always like, excuse me, what kind of dog do you have? And they're like, it's a German Doberoodle. Yes, yes, yes. I don't know why I didn't go with German Doberoodle. Yes. I was going to go with creepy, because it's a creepy dog. You're creepy, and the whole situation's creepy. I kind of want to, like, push the envelope with the dog owners. You know what I mean? What I want to do is I want to rent a Shetland pony and take it into the dog park. Just to see the look of the dog owners' faces and be like, excuse me, what kind of dog is that? It's like a mutt. I don't know. It's like part mastiff, Great Dane, hyena, collie mix. Something like that. Wow, it just really looks like a Shetland pony. I know. We get that all the time. It's uncanny. Absolutely uncanny. But it's such a great dog. I mean, I haven't even heard it bark. It's just quiet dog. And then I'm going to jump on top of it and ride it out of the park.
That was Erin Foley with a piece called Dogs, taken from her album Lower the Bar. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Loroy and Radioactivity. Now rolling into the noon hour. Constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more. Meanwhile, as a prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a copy of the Talking Animals Anniversary Bash CD. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements, and I don't really see how we could start with anything other than the outrage over the dentist who killed Cecil the lion. Probably, if you've been anywhere online in the last 24 hours, I'm sure you've seen this in all kinds of ways, but I'm just going to read a little bit of a piece I found in the Telegraph. Cecil the lion, the most famous creature in one of Zimbabwe's national parks, was killed by an American hunter who has boasted about shooting a menagerie of animals with his bow and arrow. Walter James Palmer, a dentist from Minnesota, is believed to have paid £35,000 to shoot and kill the much-beloved lion with a bow and arrow. The animal was shot on July 1 in Wang National Park. Two independent sources have confirmed the hunter's identity to the paper, which has also seen a copy of the relevant hunting permit. Conservation groups in Zimbabwe reacted angrily to the news that the 13-year-old animal had been killed, partly because the lion was known to visitors and seemingly enjoyed human contact, and partly because of the way in which he was killed. He was lured out of the national park and shot. He never bothered anybody, said Johnny Rodriguez, the head of Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force. He was one of the most beautiful animals to look at. In a statement, Mr. Palmer told Colorado News the authorities had yet to contact him and added he did not know the lion had killed was a quote-unquote local favorite. In early July, I was in Zimbabwe on a bow hunting trip for big game. I hired several professional guides, and they secured all proper permits. To my knowledge, everything about this trip was legal and properly handled and conducted, he said. I had no idea that the lion I took was a known local favorite, was collared and part of a study until the end of the hunt. I relied on the expertise of my local professional guides to ensure a legal hunt. I have not been contacted by authorities in Zimbabwe or in the U.S. about the situation, but will assist them in any inquiries they may have. Again, I deeply regret that my pursuit of an activity I love and practice responsibly and legally resulted and the taking of this lion. That is some fancy rhetoric there, right? Practice responsibly and legally and the taking of this lion. Yeah, I mean, what I understand, Dr. Palmer shot Cecil with the bow and arrow, and Cecil suffered for hours and hours and hours. Finally, someone came along and sort of humanely put Cecil out of his misery. But anyway, horrible, horrible story, and I guess Dr. Palmer has closed his practice at least temporarily, and outrage has been directed kind of specifically in his direction, so there you go. A couple other things that have been in the news, including front page of New York Times the last couple of days, some interesting things. Yesterday, Times, indeed, on the front page, carried a story on the sea shepherds' work against illegal fishing in Antarctica. The piece is titled A Renegade Trawler Chased by Eco-Vigilantes. And Sea Shepherd, of course, is the organization founded and run by Paul Watson. We've been on Talking Animals multiple times over the year. But one of the things that was just notable about the story, too, is the depth and consequences of things, including renaming a fish and demand sometimes can go with that. One paragraph says, consumer demand for toothfish skyrocketed in the 1980s and 90s after a Los Angeles-based seafood wholesaler decided to rename the oily fish Chilean sea bass to make it more appealing to the American market. An ugly bottom dweller found only in the Earth's coldest waters. The toothfish can grow over 6 feet long and weigh more than 250 pounds. The rebranding works a little too well. More fishing boats targeted toothfish, and now some scientists say that its population is disappearing at an unsustainable rate, though it is unclear how fast. Yeah, there's some other things that we'll just maybe get to next week, but you're listening to Talk Animals with Duncan Strauss, and it's time to play Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a copy of the Talking Animals Anniversary Bash CD to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. Let's name that animal tune on Talking Animals. We'll see if we take our guests on air or off, but we have either way just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Laura is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, August 5th, with another edition of Talking Animals. I hope you'll join me then. Also, hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow us on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand, other news from the Talking Animals world. It's fascinating reading, I have to say. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. All right, we've got a few folks, of course. Let's see. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're live on the air. Can you name that animal tune?
Yes, Talking. That was the B-52s with Rock Lobster.
Absolutely. You are correct, sir. What is your first name?
My first name is Jim.
Jim? Okay, Jim, you are right. We'll come back and get your information and send you off a copy of the Talking Animals Anniversary Bash CD. Thanks for listening.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I am Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind, animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show with another dog song. This one's from Eels, an alternate version of Dog-Faced Boy. On WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Thanks for listening. Speak to you again next Wednesday, 10 a.m. on Talking Animals.
Coming home from the school today, crying all along the way. Ain't no way for a boy to be begging mom to shave me, please. You little punks think you own this town. Well, someday someone's gonna bring you down. Life ain't pretty for a dog-faced boy. Life ain't pretty for a dog-faced boy. You take back what you said now. That's the last time I cry. You don't know what it is to be a friend now. Till I walk beside you on the street now. Mom won't shave me, Jesus can't save me. Dog-faced boy. Life ain't
pretty for a dog-faced boy. Life ain't pretty for a dog-faced boy. Life ain't pretty for a dog-faced boy. Life ain't pretty for a dog-faced boy. Going back to the school tomorrow. Hang my hairy head in sorrow. Ain't no way for a boy to be. Ain't no way to set me free now.